Hello, you are very welcome along to this week's RTE Rugby Podcast, and we have a busy, busy show for you this afternoon. A 24-13 defeat for Ireland against South Africa for us to talk about, but it doesn't quite tell the full story of the game. Bernard Jackman and Mike Ross are with me on the couch this week. Fellas, how are we doing this afternoon?
Good, thanks for having me on.
How are you, Bernard?
Yeah, great. Thanks, looking forward to this.
We all sound all right? No sound issues this week? We do deeply, deeply apologise for the issues last week. There was some technical issues here, an update that went awry overnight, and it caused a bit of havoc. But to make it up to you, we do think we have a brilliant show lined up for you this afternoon, because given the way Saturday's game between Ireland and South Africa went and all those scrum penalties and how, you know, a couple of yellow cards hinging off the back of it as well, there's no better way to dive in and really, really do a deep, deep analysis on it. So Mike Ross has come in this morning. We're going to do a big breakdown, get right into the weeds of it. And I think there's going to be a strong bit of debate going on over the next 45 minutes.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the scrum isn't that important until it is. And I think we saw that at the weekend. I think it's fair to say we got put on the rack, metaphorically, by South Africa for about 75 minutes. And, you know, they got a lot of reward off it. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to, you know, I have my opinion on it, Birch has an opinion on it, so we'll probably be getting into it a bit on what actually went on at the weekend.
Yeah, I think people have the reputation out there, it's the scrum halves who are the argumentative ones. I think we're going to learn a lot about what front rows are really like this morning. To warn you in advance, obviously this is a podcast, we also do video. I would recommend for the day that's in it, if you are a regular audio listener of the pod, to tune into the video that we put up on YouTube, because there's going to be a lot of visuals going on. We have some screen grabs to go through of various scrums from the afternoon. So I would recommend, if you are an audio listener, to check out the video just for today. And who knows, maybe if this goes well, we might be doing a little bit more of this and we'll see what the reaction is like. So do let us know if you want to see a little bit more of this kind of stuff on the podcast. The basic details of it also, on the scrum specifically, 16 scrums in total. Take away 4, which ended up being reset. Ireland had 10 infringements off 12 scrums. 2 yellow cards, a penalty try, and 2 tries directly came off scrum advantage then as well. Bernard, you tweeted this the other evening. Some of the reactionary punditry to this Springboks' awesome display of forward power on Saturday is hard to take seriously. I would hate to see the scrum depowered, and the Irish players and coaches will be the same. Just because one team is brilliant in one area, why would you dumb it down rather than everyone striving to get better?
I think some of the post-match reaction pundits like talking about the scrum feed, talking about the referee, you know, talking too much, talking about depowering the scrum, etc. It just comes across as crybabies, really. Like, this isn't the week to talk about a scrum feed not being straight, I don't think, if you're an Irish rugby fan or pundit. That wasn't the factor in the game. It's something that potentially you can look at again, but I don't think it's relevant to what happened on Saturday. I think what we need to do is we need to analyse the game, see where Ireland fell short, see what Ireland did well. Absolutely, they showed loads of character, but try and compare both teams and understand, is there any chance we can ever match that or find areas of weakness or learn from it? So when we play them in a year's time, in the back next November, that area of the game, which was mainly the scrum, to be honest, doesn't become the talking point or the Achilles heel for us. And I think that's why it's great to have Rossi here, to actually look at technically, tactically, what Ireland didn't do or could do, or what the referee let South Africa do that was relevant to actually an unbelievable domination. I just think the Irish players won't be looking for world rugby to save our ass here. We just got to get better at this, you know what I mean? And it's fixable. There's definitely technical, tactical things that we can implement, and we have to. I said we're never going to be like South Africa in the scrum, and Rossi will follow in on that, but we certainly, it shouldn't be an Achilles heel for us like it was at the weekend. And again, I understand you're up against an unbelievable pack. And when we look at some of the clips, we'll talk through why they're so good in that area. But yeah, we just got to accept it. We got tooled up. It's not nice. It's horrific, especially if you're a front rower. I've been in packs that have gone back, and it psychologically affects you. We showed loads of character, but realistically now you have to go. It's like England 2012 when Rossi was injured. From that, Irish rugby put in place a program, a philosophy, a mindset that it wasn't going to happen again. Unfortunately, it's whatever. 13 years later, it happens. you know, at home in our own backyard.
It's all cyclical. It all comes around eventually. As Bernard was kind of saying there, I think whether or not people agree or disagree with the calls that are made on the day around the scrum, kind of reducing it to, I suppose, using the scrums as an excuse to write off the spectacle and kind of disregard the match is ultimately pointless, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, one of the great tragedies for me in rugby in the last few years is they've changed that, held up over the line to be a goal line dropout, you know, because I think there's great spectacle in the series of 5 meter scrums. Now, I might be...
Thank God for Ireland, there might have been a few more.
Yeah, I might be alone in that, but it's games within games, you know, and I think sometimes as commentators, we don't, probably because it's backs commentating a lot of the time, we don't get into it enough, you know, and don't enjoy the little competition within a competition for what it is. Unfortunately, at the weekend, we lost, I'd say, all those competitions, you know. You referred to, I think we had about four feeds in our own ball, mm-hmm. you know. I think James Ryan going off was kind of big impact on the moment, you know. After that, we resorted to Channel 1 ball. Bertrand, I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah.
You know, kind of in and out. And Channel 1 is striking between the two flankers. Channel 2 is between the two second rows. Channel 1's quicker. So if you're watching it, Caelan Doris is picking out from between the two flanker in the second row. Gets out quicker, which is smart enough by Ireland. But, yeah, they're going to have to wear it, mm-hmm. you know. And to be fair, I mean, 2012, I think, precipitated, you know, Greg Feek going around the provinces, you know, getting an alliance scrum program. I know that in the last year or so, Seamus Toomey has been brought on board as a kind of a pathway director for props, and he's produced a lot of good props out in his former role in Blackrock College. So, you know, hopefully this is just a blip, but, you know, it does kind of, is a salutary lesson. I'd rather learn it now than in 2 years' time in a... in the World Cup quarterfinal.
Well, look, there obviously were some costly scrum penalties in that World Cup quarterfinal against New Zealand as well. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's not a one-off as a day. It has cropped up before. Before we get into some of the specific scrums, a couple of questions from social media. This one from Ordinary Fan Guy. And Mike, I think you kind of alluded to it as well. Did the Ireland scrum crumble due to James Ryan going off before his card? I'm pretty sure the scrum held up. Not sure about that part. But when you lose a 6 foot plus guy with 18 odd stone, surely this has an impact. Add the cards and you have a makeshift scrum against the world's best. Ultimately, how big of an impact was James Ryan?
I think it had a sizable impact, right? Now, I'm not saying that we wouldn't have conceded penalties or, you know, kind of lost the scrum battle with him in there, but it wouldn't have been as bad, I don't think, mm-hmm. right? You mean, are you taking a guy weighing about 120 kgs out of the mix? He's your main tight head lock, which... As a tight head, having a good tight head lock is hugely important. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, when I was playing the amount of bad scrums, I was saved by the presence of a big man behind me. You know, so you take him out of the pack, you lose weight. We're already giving up like 30, 40 kilos to him anyway. You take him out and now we're giving up, you know, 50 kilos, even with Bundiaki packing down on the blind side. So... yeah, and the fact we didn't have a second row like Ian Henderson, for example, on the bench, you know, was a selection decision I don't think we'll make again. Mm-hmm. You know, because now we have Ryan Baird and Tadhg Byrne in the second row, and neither of those guys are tight head locks, and both of them are probably around, you know, 110, 115 kilos, which is decent for, you know, a line-out lock, which is where they often operate, but you lose a lot of power with Ryan off.
Yeah, I agree with Rossi. When I was coaching Grenoble, we had Paul Willems French lock as a tight head lock, and in fairness, it made a massive difference to our scrum. But it didn't mean we had a decent scrum every week. Everything else technically and tactically had to be right, but it is an important tool. And we don't have that profile. Joe McCarthy is our best.
And
Adogbo hopefully comes through. So we might have two available for the Six Nations. And that certainly would be
On Joe, though, sorry to interrupt, does Joe consistently pack?
No,
he doesn't pack down on the tight.
No, it's that profile that potentially we have to develop to make sure we've got a production line of them, that next cab off the rank as such, if that's what we decide is part of the issue, okay? And I think with Rossi, it is the issue. The problem, the most important scrum in the game is the first scrum. okay? Because that sets the tone, okay? So anything that Matthew Carley has in his head, and lots of people are blaming him, I actually potentially got a couple of calls wrong, but generally it's the law of the jungle. Okay, if you're going forward, you get the rights. And that hasn't really changed that much, okay? And particularly if you're going forward at the speed that they were going forward, it's very difficult to expect them to stay straight at all times, okay? So the thing is not to go backwards, right? And unfortunately, the first scrum on their ball with James Ryan, we showed a serious... there's a technical, tactical weakness, and we got Hoover back. Now, Mike would argue that it was illegal and that the tight head... is angling in. I'd be disappointed in any tight head who didn't take that space if it's given to him or if they've earned it, right? So there's a couple of things that we need to look at. And this isn't knocking the Irish front five. This isn't knocking the Irish back. These lads have done more than I could ever dream of in their career, whatever, mm-hmm. British and Irish Lions, etc. But our job is to analyse this game, mm-hmm. and try and work out where the fault lines were. And unfortunately, the first one painted a very negative picture of Ireland. And we were up against an opponent who were absolutely ruthless in wanting to embarrass us, rub our noses in it for the course of 80 minutes. And to such an extent, forgot about scoreboard pressure and everything. It just became obsessive. And that's why this game became about scrums more than anything else. It was one, you had a dominant pack, and two, you had a pack and a team with a mindset of they were going to destroy us there and put a screw in our head. And I think that screw was put in our head. But obviously, we have a chance over the next year and 2 years to try and make sure the next time we play against them, it isn't such a weakness.
Question here also from Martin. Relating actually specifically to what you said, but the one thing he can't do is go backwards. How possible is it to get totally beaten in the scrum without giving away a penalty or a free kick? He says it's incredibly rare now that teams go backwards, even if they're on a final warning for a card or penalty try. So are players deciding to infringe in these situations, or are they just unable to stop it? I suppose in essence the question is kind of like, rather than infringe, is the option to just keep going backwards?
It's really hard not to infringe, right? You know, if you're going backwards, I mean, you're going to go up, down, left, right, you know, and because you're going backwards, it's deemed to be your fault,
mm-hmm.
right? The other option is just leave them walk you over your own try line. With neither is good, you know, and that's the problem when a scrum is on top as they were. It's like a snowball rolling down the hill, right? So you get penalties, right? And then you get yellow cards, and that's not going to improve the opposition scrum. You know, it's not like we'll go down to seven men and we'll be a better scrum now. You know, so it kind of has a momentum all of its own, and I think we saw the effects of that on Saturday. You know, lose James Ryan, scrum gets weaker.
Mm-hmm.
You lose Andrew Porter, yellow card, scrum gets weaker again. You know, I think we had probably, you know, five different pack combinations at the weekend, you know, with, you know, people coming on, coming off, Bundyaki going to six, you know, Keenan Prendergast coming on, Tyg Byrne and Ryan Baird in the row. It's just, it was a bit of a chaos actually at the end of it, you know, and as Birch mentioned, you know, South Africans, once they have the foot in your throat, they're not leaving it off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think before we get into the actual what happened, the question mark and Monday morning quarterback here, but when you, could Ireland have had a lock on the bench? Should Ireland have had a lock on the bench? Could Ireland or should Ireland have started Kelleher ahead of Dan Sheen? Okay, for horses for courses, mm-hmm. right? If he is the best scrummage and hooker, which we believe he is, would it have made more sense if Porter's in the firing line for referees to start Paddy McCarthy, who looks to have a tighter connection with Hooker than Andrew does, okay, at the moment. Not saying he's more powerful, Porter's phenomenally powerful, brilliant player. But again, you could have Porter, an experienced loose head, coming on potentially to problem solve rather than a young second starter in Paddy McCarthy. You know, was it the right thing to do to go 5-3? Against them. I know we don't have a million options, but these are the questions that Andy Farrell's coach and staff will be brewing over, and they'll be looking at what other teams have done against South Africa to try and negate. And I know John Smith said last week, you know, be careful of altering your game plan too much when playing against South Africa, but unfortunately they are the best in the world at the moment, and you don't want to get pinned in the one area of the game that if you are showing weakness, there's no escape from it. Like, people are saying to me, oh, why should you get penalties? You don't get penalties if your passing is poor, right? But it's totally different. Yeah. And one of the prerequisites for, one of the things that makes rugby unique is it's a game for all shapes and sizes. You depower the scrum and you effectively, you make the game even less, you make less space in the game because you've got smaller men playing prop, smaller, lighter, more mobile players playing prop, and there's less space. So there's a consequence to everything. I think the beauty of this is that if you put investment and time in your scrum program, which the box do like no one else, and you create this culture of scrummaging, and you should be able to get the reward for it. Unfortunately, the weekend we suffer for that. But rather than cry about it, just say, look, well done. Like that, what they did is magnificent. Really, it's actually magnificent. The timing, the power, the connections, whether it's legal or not. And I think it's mainly legal. Rossi doesn't agree, but I think we have to go hats off to them. Hats off to them. We can't expect referees to save us here. We just need to get better at what we do.
Mm-hmm. And to go back on, as you mentioned, the selection stuff, like, to be honest, that's not even, it's not even hindsight calls, or as you're saying, like Monday morning quarterback. We were talking about this last week and, you know, talking about the pros and cons of maybe starting a Paddy McCarthy over Andrew Porter. So it's not as if that thought just pops into people's heads immediately after the game.
No,
so,
we push it, but we don't have to live by it.
Yeah,
They have to make the decision.
But I'm just pointing out, like, it's not complete hindsight to be bringing that up. The one last little question I'm going to throw in before we get to the examples, and this one is actually from myself, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on it. Where, let's take for example that first set of scrums in a row when Ireland are pinned back on their own line. Given the way the laws are at the moment, it's probably very hard to allow yourself to do this in the moment. But if you're in that Irish front row, is there any part of your mind that thinks, if I just shove on this a little bit early, I'll give away a free kick and they can't take another scrum? Or is that actually just, have I just proposed the coward's way out of this?
Yeah, well, look, you know, I mean,
save yourself the bother of three scrums on your own line and a yellow card.
Yeah, actually, that's not a bad idea. Completely against the spirit of it, but you know, I mean,
well, Razzie would do it, would he?
Probably, you know, I mean, like,
if he found a loophole,
it's part of what would they give it? Would they say, right, you've been under pump? Is it a full penalty? Can they give a full penalty for something messing like that? I don't know.
Second, generally speaking, they'll give a free kick first time around. Mm. Second time around, it'll be a penalty. So you can only use that. You can only use that joker card once. But
yeah.
I don't know. The reason it popped into my head is from watching the Women's World Cup final or Women's World Cup quarter final, Ireland against France. It was late in that first half. Ireland's scrum was incredibly dominant. They win a penalty 5 metres from the French line. They decide they're going to take a scrum. It turns into a free kick immediately. And all of a sudden, Ireland's only option now is to tap and go 5 metres. They, like, essentially, they're in the exact same position. They have the same penalty as such, but it just got downgraded to a free kick.
Yeah, that's another back making that rule now. You know? I had forgotten about that rule, to be honest, because it came in after I finished playing. But yeah, certainly could have been an option. I mean, you know, the other one is that was used before is feign injury, you know, so or not, you know. But look, I'm glad we didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad.
You know,
too.
Yeah. So because, you know, I mean, rugby is kind of like discovering what type of person you are sometimes, you know, and taking that way out. Well, it might have been clever, and maybe, you know, if there's something on the line for it, you might look at it. But you know, I think I wouldn't like to see it.
Yeah.
No, me either.
Plaster over a gunshot wound, really, is it?
Yeah.
If it gets you out of a hole, maybe once. Now, let's move on to a couple of examples here. Just bear with me while I get our first scrum up here. So this is the opening scrum of the game we're looking at here on the screen. 9 minute mark, South Africa scrum just outside their own 22. They're leading 5-0 at this stage. This leads to a penalty advantage for South Africa, which doesn't get cashed in. They move 20 yards up the field, penalty advantages over Ireland, win the ball back. But this is the first example of the scrums that you wanted to talk about. Tell us, in each of your opinions, what are we looking at right here? Because the scrum is like it's like modern art, isn't it?
Yeah,
everyone can have an opinion.
First of all, I hate using stills, but maybe we can sort that problem out at another stage. So basically, this is a kind of in a snapshot what went wrong, right? You can see Sheehan's up in the air, right? Porter's turned in. Dutoit is inside him. Marcus has done his job and put Sheehan up in the air. But the very first scrum, as Bert says, set the tone, okay? And I, in my opinion, this is probably the one that verges on the edge of illegality, okay? The rest of them, they're probably fine-ish. But here, they hit, they win the hit, okay? Ball comes in fairly quickly and they go, right? And what they've done is they've broken the spine of the scrum here, and the spine is the joint between the hooker and the loose head, okay? So Marcus has gone after Sheehan to disrupt his shape. He's made space for Dutoit to go in and under him, and that is the result. Now, I was arguing with Birch over this because I feel Dutoit's on a big angle here, right? Usually, yes, when you're playing tight head, you try and get into this joint, go at 11 o'clock. I think he's at 10 o'clock here going across. But anyway, right, it's an English referee, used to refereeing in Premiership, where it's a bit of a, devil take the hindmost. So this is probably the most critical scrum in the game because it sets Matt Carley's ideas going forward.
Yeah, so my opinion on this still shot, and as I agree with Rossi, it's more interesting how we got here. But when you get to this point...
I'll point out as well, we're not able to use the clips.
No, sure.
Yeah.
What I will be doing, though, I will tell you exactly where it is in the match. If you have the option to go back on the RT player and watch this, you can pick it out. 9-minute mark in the game, just outside the South Africa 22.
No, but so for me, I thought it was very, very smart by the box, because there's no massive hit in the game anymore, but there's still a race across an imaginary access line. And the box consistently won that. Their punch... They put so much effort into the amount of force that they can generate over a very small area space to basically knock the opposition front row back. So effectively, after a lot of our engagements, I felt that the Irish front row and the Irish front five ended up very long in their bodies, whereas the South Africans punched and effectively caught us back before we could get into that load position. And on their own feed, they fed it very quickly, right? They fed it very quickly. So they never had to regather momentum, and they basically just were unbelievably quick at exploding. What you have here at this very moment is a disaster from an Irish point of view, okay? Because you look at Sheehan, he's up. Porter now is actually effectively, his weight is nearly helping Springboks go sideways or slightly forward. Ryan Baird is negligible. Ty Byrne, number five, look at his body angle, look at where Caelan Doris is there. But that starts with, I suppose, for me, Andrew Porter. And so Dan Sheehan's role is to deal with Malcolm Marks, okay, with his right shoulder, and close off that space. So Thomas Dutoit, the loose head, tight head, has no space to get into. So so him and Andrew Porter need to keep Thomas Dutoit straight-ish, as straight as they can, and not let him into that gap. And effectively, once he gets in there, it's all over. And at that very moment there, you've got eight Springboks pushing against...
Four
Irish fellas, yeah. Right? And that's the problem. So once you lose your angles and the opposition keep theirs, even if it's not going at 12 o'clock, if it's going at 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, you're absolutely goosed, because... As you can see there's four Irish players who are going, their angle is going to the stand if you get across the pitch rather than any way forward. And unfortunately, we saw that picture a few times during the game, and then we saw less bad examples for Ireland, but still dominant South African body position.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about, breaking the spine in the scrum. So what they're trying to do is create a 3-on-2, right? So they're kind of trying to make Porter irrelevant here.
Yeah.
So he's left him behind him. So he can't affect that scrum now. Right, the only thing you need is trying to chase it sideways and hope for the best, you know. But it starts with, as Bert said, the initial impact. We lose the first 6 inches, and scrums are a momentum thing. Once you take the first step forward, it becomes easier and easier to take the second, third, and fourth step.
Yeah, sometimes against weaker opposition, not as bad as that, but effectively, the tight head can get into that same space as the twa is there. And a strong loose head like Porter can effectively still come back at him and pop him. But they didn't. There was no second chance against the box. Like, there was no. I didn't see it, Rossi. I thought when they got into that space, They continue to explode. They were aggressive, ruthless, connected, powerful, heavy, everything you would want in a scrum. And it was so impressive.
As you were saying, what you're seeing is Thomas Dutoit coming in at the 10 o'clock angle, 10 or 11 o'clock, whatever time of the day people want to call it. But coming in just at that angle, from Andrew Porter's perspective, is there something he can do to not allow him that initial space? Can he be a bit tighter as they're setting up?
But possibly, but you know, like Marks makes the space for Dutoit as well, right? Because he's targeting Dan Sheehan's right shoulder to try and lift him up and give him some space. Now, if you've got a tight head going at an angle like that, you kind of need your own tight head to come across.
To balance it out a bit.
To balance it out, right? Because, you know, if you're looking at the vectors of force, I mean, he's going here and he's there. So you need someone coming across the other way. So you kind of need Furlong to recognize, well, once that happens, it's too late, right? Yeah. But from subsequent scrums, you need to recognize that, shit, I'm going to have to come across here a bit and to counteract what's happening, you know. And I don't know, like, I only decided to look at, so I didn't really get to see too much of it happening. And then James Ryan went off, so then it became hard.
Yeah, so James Ryan's on the pitch at this James stage, Ryan's worth pointing out as well. Yeah. Let's move it on to the next one here. So scrum number two, we're going to look at. So this is, for those who want to watch back on the match footage, 28 minutes played. This is the real start of the, I know like the first scrum, that was the start of the penalties, but this is the start of the real pressure that they were putting under in Irish territory. Just under 28 minutes played. Ireland are down to 14 players at this stage. James Ryan has been red carded. Ryan Baird has gone into the second row. Bundiaki is over on the blindside flank. This leads to a South African penalty, which they kick for touch. That becomes a maul penalty, and then more scrums and the second try off the back of it. Bernard, can you?
But
you
give us an idea? This is scrum porn here in terms of an image, right? Like for me, it's a beautiful body profile of the Springboks scrum. The ball is on its way back to the 8 feet. They're very straight there, Rossi, as in the Springboks. Are very straight, very connected. And unfortunately, Ireland have buckled on this left-hand side. And you can see, unfortunately, Porter's angle, he's actually heading towards the touchline at this very moment. I think that you can't expect the South African tight head to change his angle to try and go one-on-one with Andrew Porter here. He's going to stay as straight as he can or slightly on the angle in. We just can't let him into that space.
Yeah, and like you can see we're compressed here.
Yeah.
Right? So we've lost the initial engagement. Okay, they're longer and lower than we are, right? So they've won the engagement, and now he's on the 11 o'clock, and he's going into the joint, and he's going after, you know, Dan Sheehan's left shoulder. And as soon as we lose that, and we kind of our hips go away from us, done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, when I said the image, I'm talking about the whole eight of South Africa against the whole eight of Ireland. Look at the Irish second rows, their body position, look at even Doris is trying to catch up there, but the whole thing is crumbling in front of them. Our length of our scrum there is probably 70% of the length of the Springbok scrum.
Mm, and I suppose you're talking about all of those South African backs are parallel to the ground. Yeah. You could balance a pint glass on any one of them in theory. On the angles, so like, we're talking about Thomas Dutoit here, the 11 o'clock angle.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, like going in at that kind of an angle, it's a subtle enough angle, isn't it? Like for a referee to be looking, like we're not talking about he's like completely shearing across the side. No, that is for props. That is like that's a nice subtle and that's slight little angle.
Yeah,
to
that's
take.
Generally where most tight heads will end up.
Yeah,
you know, going at that angle because you're trying to, you know, get in the hooker as much as you can, you know, narrow your surface area for the loose head to push, lower surface area here, the less he's got to push against, you know, so you can see his where his bind is, you know, so he's pulled that back so that instead of doesn't keep it wide, keeps it narrow. Also, he can work that joint.
Look at Malcolm Marks there. You can't actually see him. That's how he's in an unbelievably good position. Like I've been saying it for years, do not underestimate the power of an unbelievably good scrummage and hooker can have. And I think everyone's talking about Thomas Dutoit. Malcolm Marks was the glue in this. He was so disruptive, and that made Andrew Porter and Dan Sheen really struggle to stay connected.
Can I talk about the binds? You mentioned Detoy's bind. Yeah. Andrew Porter's bind, that is something that gets talked about a lot. He takes a short bind, the elbow often points down towards the ground. I know from the chats we were having yesterday leading into this, you have your own thoughts on that bind.
I mean, like, okay, so this is the elbow down isn't illegal in itself, right? But referees, you know, they're often under pressure decision making, and there's some directive went out that if the elbow's down and it goes to deck, it's Loosehead's fault. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a bit of a shortcut. You know, it's not illegal in itself. I mean, where I feel you get into trouble is if it hits the deck and it's deemed your fault, because, you know, to talk about painting pictures, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'm not sure why he persists with it, right? Maybe probably because he feels stronger and more connected with it. You know, I mean, or maybe it could be, who knows, a shoulder flexibility thing, because you going over onto the back, that's quite tough, right? You go down here, you feel a bit more compact, more powerful. But yeah, so I'm not overly worried about the bind that he has there.
Is it an issue where we know by now
from a technical point of view, from a refereeing point of view, it's a different thing.
But we know by now the referees are looking for that. And that's one of the pictures they're looking for.
Yeah, and I think just this image here, I think if you think about it, if where Andrew's elbow is down here, I definitely would feel a stronger position for him to go and explode there and pop the toi, you know, because obviously he has that arm underneath him. He's more powerful than having his arm extended. The challenge is, Mike's right, it's not illegal to have your elbow down, but if the referee's interpretation is, if a scrum collapse and the Loosehead has his elbow down, they're going to penalise him. Mm-hmm. It might as well be illegal. Like, we're dealing with the interpretations as much as the actual law. I think it's an issue. I'm surprised it hasn't been coached, or he hasn't adapted it. Mm-hmm. If it's an area that the referees are examining.
Yeah, certainly one to look out for. We'll move on to our next example here now, which is going to be scrum number 3. So of our slides. So this is the fourth South African scrum of the game, just under 32 minutes played. This is actually just maybe a minute or two after the previous scrum we had. So it's really just 5 metres further in field, because it came off the penalty advantage from the previous scrum. Tommy O'Brien gave away the high tackle penalty. So South Africa decided to just move in field and take this penalty. Ireland's still on 14 players. This is actually a reset, though. This isn't a penalty either way.
No.
Why and how was this a reset rather than a penalty one way or the other?
Because it came up.
The question.
And the reason I clipped this, right, is because this is one of the instances where we don't lose. Our joint doesn't get fractured.
Yeah.
Right? So you can see where the pressure is going, okay? But instead, like, he fractured, Dan Sheeno actually fractures Marcus's joint.
Yeah.
Right? And it gets reset because everyone comes up. And I would think now, if we're doing it again, we'd probably do this a bit more.
Mm. You know? 100%.
You know, so instead of going back, let's drive up, you know, and make the referee make a decision. Mm-hmm. Because it's very easy to get a penalty given against you if you're going backwards. If it goes up, comes a bit more of a lottery.
Kind of comes to, like, sometimes you just need to swallow your pride a little bit and stand up.
I don't think standing up is swallowing your pride, because actually to get up, you've got a lot more right than you have not being able to get up. And look, it's not ideal. It's you're firefighting here when you're talking about this. But probably I'd say when John Fogarty and the forwards review this, they will, while they find better solutions for it long term, they will say, like, how could we have actually negated some of this? And I think being able to get up, being able to maybe go to ground on engagement. The scrum was nearly too clean from an Irish point of view, even though it was horrific, if that makes sense, in that we were on the back foot all the time rather than actually making the referee make different decisions. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of the same decisions because it was the same pitcher, if that makes sense. And it's not ideal, but it's what you might have to do until you have a pack who can manage them.
You know, there's a motto: go left, go right, go up, go down, don't go back. Just, you know, make the referee, make him tougher for the referee to make a decision.
Right. We'll move on to the next one, because this is pretty much straight afterwards, sixth scrum of the game. The clock is in the red by now. So this is, I said this is a few good few minutes later. This is just after Jack Crowley has been sent to the sin bin. Sam Prendergast is also in there. So Ireland are down to 13 players at this stage. The pack is restored. Cian Prendergast has come on. Ryan Baird is in the second row. Prendergast is in the back row. It's also the first scrum that we have right after Wilco Lowe and Gerhard Steenkamp come on as well. So a fresh set of legs in the South African second row, or in the South African front row, which was it was a sight to behold in the moment at the ground.
Yeah.
I said it was like a tag team getting ready to run in the WWE or something like that.
Yeah.
And Razzie Erasmus standing down there like Vince McMahon sending them on.
It was a great bit of, you know, tactical from Razzie, but like, here comes the new boss, same as the old boss. You know, it's kind of, again, he's got the same picture. You know, Wilco is heading again for the joint, right? He's heading into it. And like, I'm a huge admirer of the two South African titles, by the way. I think if you're designing a video game character, right, and you put all your points into scrummaging, it'd look like Wilco Lowe.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, I mean, it's just more the same. You know, again, they've just come on, they're fresh. You know, the Irish front row was, oh great. You know, seeing two mutants running onto the pitch again. Yeah. But, yeah, we're down. Is this a 7-man scrum, I think, is it?
No, yeah. this is 8-man.
8-man.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's a full forward pack, but there's two backs. in the sin bin.
Yeah.
So Rossi, just let's just look at this, right? So you used to play tight head. Did you like to get into that 11 o'clock?
I loved it.
Loved it. Okay, right.
Yeah.
What loose heads, or what would a loose head doing to you would stop you getting into the position you wanted to be in?
He'd have to kind of get under me, you know, or I'd have to be blocked from getting in there.
Yeah.
So the danger is if he goes for this, right, and he doesn't get in there,
yeah,
he turns sideways and then he can be picked up and thrown over his own second rows. You know, so yeah. that's the danger. Okay. You know, but to do this, you have to earn the right. You have to go forward to get in there. That makes sense. So you have to go forward first before you can get in there.
How much more difficult did it become to find that space when things went from the old hit and chase days to the crouch bind set?
It was a bit of an adjustment, right? You know, because you could hit and chase and use momentum, whereas with the crouch bind set, it's more of a wrestle. And do you know what? I actually preferred the wrestle after initial adjustment, you know, because it wasn't just a case of whoever won the initial engagement won the scrum. There was an opportunity to recover and
ongoing battle.
Yeah, ongoing battle and readjust.
Yeah, I think when the hit was there, we used to say hit 80%, win at scrum 20%. So if you won that hit, the pushing was only 20% of it. But now, obviously, it's more of a battle of angles, of connections. But Rossi, okay, obviously, you said get blocked. So the hooker would block you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What would the loose head hit, you know, where would his angle be? Where would his hips be? Would they be going at 1 o'clock like we are here, or would he be tighter to the hooker and hitting you out?
Well, it's hard to hit me out because I'm straight on his inside, right? So he's the only guy's right shoulder to work with. But yeah, look, I think the hip connection could probably be better. But again, this is a still, you know, so you need to look at the scrum as how we end up there, you know, because once you start taking steps in, that kind of turns the loose head in a bit as well, you know, to try and stay connected with you. So yeah, I mean, like, once a tight head gets into that position, it's very hard for loose head to come back. I mean, Porter's probably trying to pick up his right shoulder,
yeah,
you know, trying to squat him.
I thought there was a consistent height variation between Porter's hips and Sheehan's hips, and I also thought that Porter sometimes, not picking on him, just analysing what we can see.
But he's the player, the Irish player that we're seeing most of.
All these angles are this side or whatever. So unfortunately, you have to look at that. But I thought sometimes his outside foot, his left foot, was quite wide and quite forward. And I think for me, the loose head should be putting a little more weight through their inside foot, Rossi, that to basically be able to keep that tight head at least honest as possible.
Yeah, generally, like I never played loose head myself, right? Oh, actually, I played once. But yeah, you on your tight head, most of your weight's going through your left foot.
Yeah.
On loose head, corollary, you follow that most of your weight should be going through your right foot.
So these are little things technically that Ireland will be looking at at far greater detail than I can say. But just that, if you want to give our viewers an insight into potentially where the fault lines were, I think they're issues.
Yeah, and it is really good to point those things out, that for such a large set piece where there's so much power and gigantic individuals, it is worth pointing out, like, these tiny little things make such a difference of a right foot being 20, 30 metres forward or back one side or the other, like tiny little minute details.
Yeah, and especially with the problem we have is that the box don't rely on their weight or their size. They match that with really good technique, mm-hmm. really good tactical. And like they're a little bit, I spoke to their scrum coach last summer and he was saying, it's a little bit like the rowers trying to find out the best combination for the boat. Like, they're constantly working out, well, what three or what five can create the most power, mm-hmm. you know? And they can do that. Even this week, I saw Dan Heumann was asked, because obviously they've lost a lot of players for the Welsh game, are you doing live scrums? Yes. We always do live scrums, you know? And every live scrum session they do is an opportunity for someone to go up or down the pecking order. And again, we don't have that competition as such, but I think that they've invested in this for the last 6-7 years. And on Saturday, they got their greatest reward. Well, sorry, the World Cup final against England, they got the greatest reward for it. But Saturday, it all came right because technically, tactically, and size-wise, they have it all.
Absolutely. So this ended up being the penalty from which Andrew Porter got the yellow card. And then Paddy McCarthy came in afterwards. This is probably the moment where I was suggesting earlier on, do you know what, I might just offer up the free kick and get out of here. But let's go on to the next one here now. We're into the second half at this stage, I believe. Yeah. And this is the first Irish ball that we're going to be looking at so far. This is 52 minutes played. Caelan Doris and Ryan Baird have just disrupted and held Jasper Visa up off a maul gun towards the line. You can see Ireland are pinned back. They're under a lot of pressure. This actually resulted in a phenomenal kick from Jameson Gibson-Park. Mm. Like, just look at the position they're in right now. He manages to get a low box kick to go out of play about 2-3 metres inside the Irish half. It was a sensational kick. But I suppose with so many infringements on the South African ball, this was an example of a scrum Ireland won. Can you tell us why you wanted to talk about this one specifically, Mike?
It just shows, again, you know, what they're targeting. Right, so Marks is down, Sheehan's up. Okay, we get the ball away by the skin of our teeth, you know. But I prefer to see this picture going up rather than going back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in this picture you can see actually what Mike said earlier on about Furlong trying to come back across and protect. So if you look at both tight heads here, well, you can only barely see their tight head. Well, you can see him, but. Like, Furlong has reacted to that by going in on a 9 o'clock, whatever. And effectively what happens is there's no space for anywhere to go.
Yeah.
Because if you look at Burns' body shape, Burns is still connected to Tighe, Prendergast connected to Tighe. It's not perfect, but Peter Steff-Dutoit has popped up. Jasper Vies has popped up. Yeah. So this is one of the three examples where the Springboks didn't have Ace in a good position. But Furlong... He reacted to the power coming from the other side, and effectively we didn't go back. We didn't go down. We popped up and were able to play away. But this was our ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is when on their ball, there's no mercy. You know?
Mm-hmm. How much does the to mention since how much is the feed coming into it? And I we kind of said it at the start. I think you said it, Bernie. You don't want to make this a conversation, yeah. but if we make straight feeds, that's going to
I'm going to have a rant about the feed now.
Go for right. it.
The feed is here to stay.
Yeah.
We're never putting it under people's faces again, okay? Because if you just imagine, you bend over, right? You put 200 kilos on your back. Now I want you to stick your foot out, level with your face. You can't do it, right? So if you had a straight feed, the ball would just sit there in the middle of the scrum until someone pushed over it.
Okay? And for Irish people, Irish fans saying the feed, that's fine. They may have a love for the feed globally, but it wouldn't have helped us at the weekend. It would actually make it worse. It would make it worse because effectively, when we struck for that ball, they would have had 8-7 for that second, and we would have pushed. We were able to win our own ball, like under pressure. We won our own ball, so it's not the solution at all here. It's something that unless you love the craft of the nine putting the ball in and the hooker striking it, I don't think it's significantly going to come back into the game.
No, because first of all, the rules say you can have a shoulder closer to your own side of the scrum when you're putting the ball in. And second, if you just look at how the scrum has evolved, I mean, the idea of the old fashioned honour battle of hooker striking for the ball, you can't do it. I mean, the size and weight of those guys, if you take your foot up and you try and put up near your face, you're going to get crippled.
Mm-hmm. Do you genuinely think we'll say if a referee decided tomorrow morning, I'm only enforcing straight down the line scrum feeds, it actually becomes a safety issue?
It'll sit underneath the front row's faces and it'll be whoever can win the scrum battle.
Yeah, or you'll have a lot of collapses. Mm-hmm. You'll have a lot more collapses. But like both teams, if no one goes forward, someone will eventually just crack it and it'll everyone the six front rowers will end up in their face.
You'll have more scrums.
More scrums. Yeah.
Right. This is the last of the images we have here now. And I suppose this is the second yellow card of the game. This is where Paddy McCarthy gets the yellow. So the context around it, just on the hour mark on this, the 14th South Africa scrum of the game. God said that they ended up having 16 scrum feeds. McCarthy, Beelam and Kelleher are all on the pitch now. Cian Prendergast is actually in the second row because Ryan Baird has just gone off injured. He's in the second row with Tadhg Byrne. Just before this, we actually had a reset. And it was the previous scrums leading up to this. There was a collapse before the ball is in. Reset. Then another collapse even before the ball is in. Penalty. You can hear Matt Carley actually speaking to Caelan Doris and Paddy McCarthy just before this scrum. And you can hear him say, he must engage with his head above his hips. It's two scrums in a row. He's not giving me a lot of options. Scrummage up, please. So the warning signs have been there. And the result of this is another collapse. It seems to go down on both sides, it ended up being a penalty and yellow card for McCarthy.
I put this on because clearly when the second front row came on, they've been instructed to scrummage lower.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you look how Finlay Beelam sets up. He's like, his knees are nearly touching the grass and he's getting long just to keep it
very long,
straight, just square straight and lock it out. You know, so, and you know, it goes straight to deck, but it's not going back.
Mm-hmm.
So they are trying to problem solve on the fly here. Okay, but again, it doesn't help that we're probably outweighed by 80 kilos at this stage.
Yeah, and on this image, I totally agree with you, Rossi. I think one of the areas they would have said we didn't do well in the first half was we didn't control the height. We allowed the box scrummage at the height that they were very comfortable and very powerful at. So that was something that we definitely can improve on. Here, when we made change, we didn't get the height right. But again, like, look at Andre Esterhazen, they're hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
His body position is pretty good for a fella who hasn't spent his whole life on the back of a scrum. And then their second row's body position is exceptional, I would say. But yet, Ireland, this is here at least we're making the referee make a decision. And unfortunately, you bring it to that height, the scrum collapses a bit earlier in the game. He doesn't obviously give a penalty, I don't think. But it was just in his mind, he was just getting so frustrated with Ireland for the consistent amount of penalties that we'd shown, and we get penalised again.
Yeah, but like, you know, Andre Esterhazen, he's a 120 kilo centre that plays a flanker. You know, 120 kilos, that's way over some of our tight head props.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting, actually. This is a sequence of about three scrums in a row, and this is the last one where Paddy McCarthy gets his yellow card, but it was either the one previous or the one just before that. You could see on this side. So it's Beelam against Gerard Steenkamp here. And on one of the scrums, I did think it was very, very interesting. Steenkamp just, he doesn't engage with the same level of kind of punch that he had been on the previous ones. And I think Beelam kind of was expecting a little bit more and as a result ended up pancaking. Yeah. And that kind of resulted in one of the penalties. It was just a very nice little kind of subtle, I'll go in. It wasn't that he wasn't taking the hit. He just wasn't taking the hit.
The same
way that he had been previously. And I thought it was just a very cute little way of playing things out.
Yeah, but I think every scrum will be slightly different. They'll have multiple calls, multiple feel, they react. And it's gamesmanship as well. You know, it's not just weight is massively important. It's, I don't doubt it for a second. But I think at the moment what we're seeing is a scrum who's unbelievably comfortable, confident, tactically flexible, and put on one of the greatest scrummaging displays at test level in the last couple of years, I think. And unfortunately, we were the ones who faced it and couldn't come up with an answer.
So that's the last of our examples we're shown here.
Mm-hmm.
To wrap it all up, what is the solution? Do we need more big meaty fellas in the front row? Do we need better technique? What's the short term fix and what's the long term fix?
Look, I don't think there's many teams in World Rugby. Probably mainly only South Africa.
Yeah, no one else.
No one else can do that, right? So I'd be keen to. We don't need a knee jerk reaction here. Okay, it would help if we kept 15 players on the pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, it would help if we had a backup tight headlock on the bench. Okay. Or someone who could play tight headlock. So, you know, if you've Joe McCarthy and James Ryan in the same second row, then both of them can play tight headlock. Okay, so if one goes off, the other one can fill in. But I think it is a salutary lesson that, you know, the scrum still matters. It still matters big time. And, you know, I mean, I'm not massively worried about our prop factory. You know, I mean, I mentioned Seamus Toomey's on that now working, and I see some good young guys coming through. You know, I mean, I look at Leinster. You know, you see the likes of Niall Smith, and you've Andrew Sparrow, younger. You know, obviously, Thomas Clarkson has come through. Mm-hmm. You look over at Ulster, you've Wilson coming through there. Down in Connacht,
Fiacnabarrus,
and down in Munster, there's another big. Do you remember
Fox?
Fox, Rowan Fox. Yeah. So there's some big boys around, right?
And that's just the tight heads.
That's
as
just
well.
The tight heads. Yeah.
Rossi only cares about tight heads.
Loose heads are basically back rows.
Yeah. But like loose heads, you know, Paddy McCarthy, Jack Boyle,
yeah.
You know, there's who've been capped already. Mm. You know, so they're coming through. I mean, the problem, you know, why are South Africa so good? Because they have a population of about 80 million people, mm-hmm. and they have a scrum culture. And they have the genetics to do it, you know. They you know, the big Boer farmers, you know, which those guys, you know, Dutoy and Wilco Lowe, you know, good Afrikaner extraction, you know. And they love the scrum. They live for the scrum.
Yeah, but right? So there's the answer, Rossi. The answer is so we have personnel coming. We have personnel in the team who've done this at the highest level and matched the Springbok pack in the past. Now I think it's the scrum culture, and
it starts today when people are doing dedicated podcasts on RTE.
Yeah,
about
I've never got more phone calls in the last few months than I did Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah, but I think what we need to do is we need to go back to where we were under Fiki, where we nearly have an Irish scrum philosophy that's, and I know Seamus Toomey's in there to do that, but effectively what you need then is you need it to be put into play at test level in a very consistent way. We can match this scrum, but not without unbelievable technical and tactical attention to detail.
It's like what you were talking about a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the line-out issues, and you were saying, doesn't really feel like there's a player in that group now who is like the complete line-out nerd that Paul O'Connell would have been back in the day, where all they want to do is sit in the analysis room and pour over lineouts and try to figure out little things. It's kind of the same idea, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, again, maybe it's we reward or we have our best scrummaging props, our pack, and when we come up against France away and the Six Nations, if we feel that they're geared up towards that, or we play South Africa, that they basically, that's their day, you know, mm-hmm. like they do. They pick horses for courses, and it's hard to expect all our players to be brilliant athletes, brilliant ball players. We don't need them all to be, you know, for certain games you need to be able to secure primary possession or not give away penalties in an area. So that's something that I'm sure will be one of the things they look at. But again, what's going on at provincial level? How important is scrummaging? What's going on in the academies? You know, are we just looking for that mobile front row or the mobile second row rather than someone who in time can be a really good set piece forward as well?
Yeah.
Like it's going to have to come from, this is nearly not a national emergency, but this is something that you can't just park it again. Because if we park it and ignore it, not saying they would ever do that, but if we do next November and potentially at a World Cup, maybe it's not South Africa exposing us. Maybe it's the All Black, like our scrum was under a bit of pressure in Chicago as well. It's never been tooled up like this, but I don't think it's a dominant scrum and hasn't been for a long time in terms of winning matches with your scrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like one of my bugbears is we produce a lot of players out of the school system, right? let's say 90% of the players are coming out of the school system, bar, you know, some of the Osborne and Furlongs. But, and what's valued at the school level, because there is no penalty for having a bad scrum at school level. Mm-hmm. You know, you push a meter and a half. Mm. And so, you know, the coach is there and, you know, what you incentivize, you produce. Okay. So if there's no, if you're rewarded for having skillful mobile props and not big scrummagers, then that's what you're going to produce, you know? So I'd like to see, you know, pushing more than a meter and a half, you know, gone from, say, under 16s up.
Yeah, I agree. I think under 20s level in Ireland, maybe I'm correct in this, but I don't think you can score a pushover try from a 5 meter scrum. So there's still that handicap, mm-hmm. or like at under 20s level. So it's one thing at schools level, but like some 20 year olds can play professional test rugby. So again, maybe these are little areas. We need to reward scrummagers. We need to reward teams. Like I did a coaching conference in Stellenbosch last year for schoolboy coaches, and the amount of head coaches who are ex-props, you know, it doesn't really happen here, like at the same level. Like it's, they have this, you can build a reputation on your love and to play coach the scrum in South Africa, whereas here it's seen as a restart. Turning that around, it doesn't have to become the be on end all. We still want to be a team who can play, yeah. But you can't give up what we give up on Saturday, or even half it. To be honest, even half it. If you give up half that against England and France in the Six Nations, say goodnight to your chances of winning the match.
Absolutely. Moral of the story: the scrum still matters, yeah. Fellas. Thanks a million for joining us. It's been brilliant. We will revisit some of the other talking points from this November block, probably next week, because there's a World Cup draw happening this day next week. I'm sure we're going to be talking a lot about it, and we'll get into some of the other bits, like the general game plan, the discipline. A card a game across the last 22 matches since the Rugby World Cup has to be spoken about. But Bernard, Mike, thanks a million for joining us. This has been brilliant. If you did enjoy it, let us know on the YouTube comments, and we'll try come up with some other of these maybe dedicated analysis podcasts along the way as well. But thanks for watching. Thanks for coming in, lads. And we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks.